Welcome to episode 8 of the Furlough Bros Tech Podcast. Today is November the 20th, 2011. I'm Matthew Furlough, and this is my co-host slash brother, James Furlough.
Hi there! My, how time flies. It's the 20th already.
It's crazy. So this week, like every week, we'll be talking about technology in the continuing corporate opera, the soap opera that is corporations' dealings back and forth, the people working for them, their marketing campaigns, and the technology they're developing. James is going to hit us up with a short disclosure.
Yeah, sure. For starters, or for disclosures, whatever, I work for Hewlett-Packard. However, I do not resent them, nor do I represent HO.
And Dr. Freud.
Wow. So, as you have guessed, I work for HP, but I do not represent HP's opinion. So I should always say I when talking about something. And if I ever say we, I meant to say I. That's important.
Cool.
And I don't resent HP, actually. I really like HP. It's a good company.
Definitely, so definitely.
I should dig myself out of that hole.
Yeah, I, and obviously I represent my own opinions and nobody else's, so good times. So really quickly, just... if you guys want to follow our amazing thoughts throughout the week that are captured in a few hundred characters or less, my Twitter handle is at Matthew D. Furlough.
And mine is at James Furlough.
Sweet.
And I think it's important to note that you can also find us at the newly unveiled, never before seen, you heard it here first, furloughbros.com. That's right.
I'd like...
Oh, sorry. I was going to spell it out. FURLOBROS.com. And our Twitter handle is actually at the bottom of that site. P.S., you could also go to furloughbrothers.com, but it will just redirect you to Furlough Bros. So, take that.
Yeah, that is cool. I do want to point out the fact that they probably didn't hear it here first, since they would have had to go to the website to download the podcast.
Well, so chances just, are... that means they maybe read it first.
Okay. That's right.
Internalized it first. Or...
highly likely that this is the first place where the sound waves will hit your eardrums.
Stumbled upon it first. I don't know.
Or Twitter followed it first.
Yeah, exactly. Maybe.
Cool, dude. I'm pretty excited about it. It looks super clean. It might change a little bit as time goes on, but it's working great, and you can listen to it there, download the audio, and just share it with all of your friends and family.
And if you're on my computer, you can click on the link that says subscribe via iTunes. If you're on Matthew's computer, you can't. So we'll be solving that one.
This is a hit or miss sort of thing.
Yeah. Technology. That's why we're here.
If by chance you are listening to this and you couldn't subscribe to iTunes, do us a favor and go to Twitter, mention us in a tweet, and say, I couldn't subscribe to iTunes. Or if you could, that would be an interesting way to take a poll.
Done.
Cool.
I love it.
All right, dude. So, without too much further ado, tell me about Monday. Something exciting happened.
Yeah, something exciting did happen. iTunes Match launched on Monday. Wow, that was significantly more difficult to say than I thought it would be. iTunes Match launched Monday. So, basically, quick reminder, iTunes Match means that Apple's going to be able to look at all the songs on your iTunes, or, yeah, it's on iTunes, and be able to say, hey, yeah, we have that song, or we don't have that song. And in either case, they're going to be able to put your songs onto the cloud, and then you will be able to access them from any device that Apple owns at any time. I mean, unless you don't have a Wi-Fi, or I mean, unless you don't have a 3G connection, in which case, you know, hopefully it was already downloaded to your device. Kind of cool. It's, oh yeah, another important factor, it is $25 per year. And the other, I mean, like, the really important part here is, like, you didn't have to buy it on iTunes. You literally could have gotten it off of CD or from the intertubes.
right.
Doesn't matter. I mean, that was the kind of thing is, like, Apple's figured out a way to make money off of pirated music. Cool. Awesome.
Right.
So here's the question, Matthew.
Hmm.
Did you totally sign up for it?
I did. And
really? You did?
I did.
Wow.
I got crazy.
I was not expecting that answer. All right.
So one of the things that's important to mention here is that it only works for iOS 5 devices. iMatch and your music in the cloud. Now, you can obviously download songs from iTunes onto your older phone, but it's not like I can download any song anytime on my first-generation iPod that has iOS 3.
Yeah, that's logical.
Right. And so one of the things that happens is I am having a bit of an emergency over here. Everything's falling down around me. It's like an earthquake. Welcome to California. Anyway, sorry. Back on topic. So for my device, it won't affect my device. But one of the things that I have found is that I currently have three computers. One that I use primarily, one that I use really infrequently, and then one that's not working. And that should be fixed this week, by the way. I'm taking care of that. But because I have three devices and there's this kind of strata of time that I got, that I had iTunes, and so I've got completely different libraries on each device.
Oh, fascinating.
Or on each computer, and so I really wanted to get to the point where I could kind of unify that all into one computer, one iTunes account, and just take that with me as my computers continue to evolve.
Yeah, I think I remember you talking about at one point in time, you had like a huge iPod, and you were like, I don't want to sync this because I'll lose everything.
Right. I've had, you know, the problem that they're trying to fix is a problem that I've had for a long time.
Cool.
And so when it was announced, I was really excited about it, especially because I have a tremendous amount of music that I got off of CDs that I have broken or lost over the years. There is a certain amount of music that may not have been obtained fully legally. but there's just a lot I've only got a couple hundred songs that I've bought through iTunes. And I've got a few thousand songs, though. And so I figured for $25 a year, it'd be like I'd be able to get all of my music, I'd be able to listen to it whenever. So that was my justification. Now to the practical using iTunes Match.
Right.
Number one, you need the latest version of iTunes, which check before you do that, because iTunes will acknowledge the fact that iMatch exists, but will, like, run you around in circles if you don't have the latest version.
Huh.
Took me, like, an hour to figure it. It doesn't just tell you, hey, you don't have the latest version of iTunes. You need to get the latest version. So that is one thing. Took me a little while to figure that one out, but I got that working.
Nice.
And then I signed up for the Google beta, the Google Music beta, and I couldn't stomach it because it was just taking so many days to load my music into the cloud, and
mine eventually did
really
it.
Like
it took me forever, but eventually,
yeah. I just couldn't. I couldn't stomach it because it slows down the internet for everybody.
That's
that
true.
I live with.
That is true.
And especially as an upload thing, because upload takes more bandwidth and yet goes slower, which is super annoying. Anyways, iTunes on one computer, I had 1,800 songs. It was able to automatically sync like 1,600 of them.
Wow.
Without any upload. There were about 300 it had to upload, and it did that last night, just pretty seamlessly. It worked really well. I liked it a lot. That was one of my computers. My primary computer has been a royal pain in the butt. It keeps crashing iTunes. iMatch will start to work and then stop working for one reason or another. I'm pretty sure I'm going to have to completely uninstall iTunes and reinstall it in order to get everything working. There's just a lot of bugs involved in iCloud. And obviously it's this huge new platform using a massive new data center, and there's just a lot of places to make mistakes. So the engineer in me kind of understands that, but the Apple fan that knows that Apple's, you know, their entire thing is it's easy to use, is a little bit irritated. It's not working as seamlessly as I'd like it to on every computer, and you know, and maybe I'm being a little bit you know, obnoxious and asking a little too much, but I just wanted to. I guess it's especially annoying because it's my primary computer, and it has the smallest library. So I'm like, come on, guys, get it to work. But you know, the nice part about Apple is I will probably go to the Apple Store tomorrow morning and ask them to, you know, help brother out, and and they're great about that sort of thing. They'll look at your PCs and they'll only mock you a little. you know, get you all shipshape. So hopefully that'll happen tomorrow, and
cool.
I'll get everything in order. But I did sign up for it. Now, I know you have an iOS 5 device. You have the iPhone 4S.
Yes.
What did you decide to sign up for it?
No, and part of the reason is I just have one. Well, my computer and my phone are my two devices, and that's it. And I'm the kind of guy who, you know, I work from home. And so, like, syncing is... I used to sync once a week before they had the over-the-air syncing. And so, you know, my stuff never got out of sync. And my collection's fine, and the quality's fine as far as I can tell. Not that I really have anything to compare it to. And, you know, so it just hasn't been an issue for me. I just don't need it, I guess is what I'm saying. I have all my songs on all my devices at all times. And so, and plus, you know, now anytime I purchase a new song, it downloads to both and you know, does it instantly. And like I said, I plug my phone in at night and it'll auto sync up just like with my apps and stuff. And so I just don't need it just because, like I said, I'm thorough already.
Yeah, that's, you know, and I think that they're going to find a lot of that. You know, obviously, if it was in, I think if it were, something they intended for everybody to use, it would be free or cheaper. I don't think it's a product that they intend everybody to use, which is why it's, you know, more expensive than their Word and, you know, number sheets, you know, their numbers program put together.
Makes sense.
Which from a utility perspective is, you know, way more useful. So I don't know. Interesting. It's a cool product. I like it so far, and I am excited to get to use it more.
Nice. Very cool. Very, very cool. Another thing that I'd like to talk about, or at least just real quickly mention, because it's pretty awesome, is Katzenberg, who is the, I guess he called, he's the CEO of DreamWorks. He was a guy who used to be like the head honcho animator for Disney, and they just had creative differences. And so he split off when, what's his face? He's a director and made a bunch of really good movies. What is his name?
Guy who made Jonathan.
No. I'm saying who his. He did War of Worlds.
Spielberg,
thank you. Yes. Spielberg, wow. Actually. I know, I'm horrible. So, anyways, so Spielberg started up DreamWorks, or was like a major investor in DreamWorks, one of the moving guys. And so he hired Katzenberg to run DreamWorks for him, basically. And
that's hilarious. So I didn't realize that Spielberg started DreamWorks.
Yeah, or he's one of the three founders type of thing. Him and some guys with a whole bunch of money.
Because as a lot of people know, George Lucas started Pixar.
Right.
And so I didn't realize that they competed in that direction. That's interesting.
Yeah. Well, and now DreamWorks is, you know, bigger than just CG animation. I don't know, what would you say? Transformers? Is that CG or not CG? I'm trying to think which one's more.
Touché.
But anyways, that's not the point of this at all. The point, other than feeding the soap opera part of our show, is that Katzenberg was saying that they're working on a new technology that will allow them to render animation in real time. So the problem right now is that animators, they'll do drawings and they have to do like the equivalent of a sketch drawing, and then they give it to a computer, and that computer crunches overnight, and then the next day they get to watch it, and as it was like meant to be seen, and then they go, oh well, that didn't turn out the way I thought it would, or that didn't do this, and then they have to go back and do it, and the I'm trying to remember where his I'm trying to find out where his number was, but yeah, they were saying that an animator can do about 3 seconds of animation in a week.
Okay. Holy cow! That is time-consuming.
Yes. Yeah, you can see why they have such large names of people, because they just, they just get an army of guys going. And like I said, the problem is this whole, like, you can't see what you're actually doing. You are creating in a different medium than the final thing. It's like coding, basically. I mean, it's kind of strange. Yeah. So anyways, they're working on a new technology or new software that literally is letting them make art or, do their animation at, like, the highest, at the final cut in real time.
Wow.
And so they expect to see a 50 to 70 times, improvement in their productivity from their animators. Part of it is we got these wicked fast computers now, but the software was just never, it was first written back when computers were not that powerful. And he's like, we're just finally taking the time to go back and do it the right way. And he's like, we're getting there, and it's going to work.
Fascinating.
Yeah, that was cool.
That'll be interesting to see the consequences of that, because, one of the things that, to see the transition of it used to be originally making a movie was difficult, but doing live action was the easiest. And then animation started to come in, and it still took an army. And as time has kind of progressed, it's become to the point of the reason why Saturday morning cartoons are all cartoons, and there's so many cartoons out there, is because oftentimes you can tell stories that would be financially impossible to tell with real people with cartoons, and you can do it for cheaper and faster. And some critics might say that animation takes away some of the quality of the movie because it makes it too easy. So it'll be interesting to see if it becomes to the point where you don't need as many animators, you don't need as much time, if that just becomes a staple of movie industries churning out literally low budget, high quality animation movies, and by high quality I mean the graphics are high quality, not necessarily the storyline or the acting.
Right. Which, I mean, as we've talked about before, it's like the storyline's everything. I mean, I don't care what you can do something compelling with stick figures if the story is good. And that'll just be what they have to keep in mind. But totally makes sense why they're doing this, because it'll save them, ton of money. Which is neat.
Right. Very cool.
Yeah. Yeah, it is cool. So now I'd like to shift a little bit to something that I know that you'll find particularly interesting, because you've mentioned this multiple times. There's an article talking about how students have hacked the Kinect to allow the blind to navigate.
Yeah. This is pretty exciting technology.
So what they did was they wired the Kinect to a set of motors that allows the blind to navigate a room or an open space, and they get feedback through the motors. To help them assess where the objects are. At this point in time, it's totally clunky, and the Kinect itself isn't even wearable yet. But I'm bringing this up just because it's cool to see what's happening is exactly what you said was going to happen. Is there's a homebrew club, basically, that's evolving, because there's all these different parts and pieces, and there's like, let's see what cool stuff we can do. And we are literally just seeing the nascent stages in some ways, this is like a human robot, right? And we're just going to get closer and closer to that. Instead of driving a car, you're flying around in a suit type of thing, Iron Man style. And this is what we're starting to notice happen. It's just pretty cool. We'll see where it goes in the future. This is probably done, or they'll modify it a little bit and then they'll graduate from school and go on to do something else.
Right. Good resume builder, but
yeah,
not necessarily a product.
But I like where they're headed and where it's going. I think it's doing exactly what Microsoft was hoping to do, because right. Eventually someone's going to come up with an application where you're like, wow, no, this is perfect. This is exactly what you're supposed to do, and they'll send millions of Kinects just for that.
Yeah, it's a, you know, it really is a, you know, one of the things that Johnny Lee said back when the Wii first came out. He's actually a guy who worked in an independent lab, eventually was hired by Microsoft and worked on the Kinect. And if you remember Ted, they did a TED Talk. He did a TED Talk where he demonstrated his 3D, you know, he could do without glasses-free 3D, where it just used head tracking. And yeah. One of the things that he said was, his comment was, the reason why it was so the Wii was so exciting for him is because it put high-quality sensors in the hands of millions of people at affordable prices, and it changes what you can do, and it changes how you work, and you can, there are tremendous numbers of Wii hacks. People, I myself went out and bought a Wiimote just to hack it, not even to use it, and that's what's going to happen with the Kinect, because it's, where the Wii was a huge step forward, the Kinect is just a massive step forward. It's a really, really impressive sensor. It's unfortunate that they can't make fun games for it. But it's...
So I heard that the new version of Zelda is the best version ever.
Yeah.
They're saying it's even more fun than the Ocarina of Time.
Oh, man.
And Wind Waker.
Might ask for that one.
By the way.
I liked Ocarina more. Wind Waker was awesome, but...
I know, and they're saying that this one is, you know, not like, you know, leaps and bounds, but they're like, it's just as good, if not better, than those two.
Wow.
Which, yeah, I was like, wow, that's
all right, I might have to...
all over.
Right. I'll have to check that out. Maybe put that on the old Christmas list. But that's cool. That's exciting to see going on.
Yeah. Yeah, it is pretty exciting. So there you go. They're still coming out with at least one cool game for the device.
Definitely.
But yeah, there it is. So for a second here, I wouldn't mind switching over to our beloved friend, the iPhone. And I have three different pieces of news, and I guess then a fourth one that's semi-related to it. Okay, first of all, iOS 5.1 is coming down the pipe. First of all, they're doing the one that's fixing all the battery bugs, which I haven't had any, so I'm kind of like, whatever, don't care. Mine's fine. But what's really cool is they're bringing expansions to Siri in 5.1 already. And, you know, so, surprise, surprise, right? They're getting all these commands, and they're collecting them and going, hey, here's what people want to do. Let's figure out a way how to let Siri do it. And...
that's exciting.
And so, like, some of them that they're saying are, like, more hardware control stuff. So, take a picture. Which I think sounds weird, and that'd be interesting to see how that works, but could be. Make a video. Switch on off Wi-Fi. Switch on and off Bluetooth. You know, just things like that. And then they're also talking about... go ahead.
That would be awesome to be able to, like, step on the plane, hit Siri and go, airplane mode, and have it, you know, turn on airplane mode, effectively killing itself.
That would be weird.
That's dark.
Do like a howl type of closing, or just start singing that song. Daisy. You know, something crazy like that will be there. but I think it's cool. You know, they're already coming out with, hey, we're going to start adding improvements. You know, and they're going to do, like, the whole language and map support and, you know, keep adding that stuff like they should. And Jesse's saying that once they add Spanish, she's going to try flipping it to Spanish for a while to see how that works out. And I was like, oh, that'd be weird. I'd never be able to talk to Siri. but yeah, so it'll be cool to see what they're doing. Cool. It's exciting. Improvements to Siri, always good. You know what would also be nice for them to improve is I was doing some research on this. I'll back it up a step. I have a clock app that when it goes off, you shake it to wake up. I think I shared this with you, actually, last time we came down. And it,
it's,
it talks to you.
It's pretty obnoxious, but awesome.
Yes, but which is what you need when you're waking up. In iOS 5, totally breaks it. Doesn't work. Because the problem is, and I don't fully understand how it works, but like the app basically goes into the background when the phone turns off. And so a banner pops up. Great. I am not awake. And you have to, you know, tap on the banner to get it to work. Now you can switch it so it doesn't do a banner. It actually does like a regular alarm thing. Doesn't matter. It'll still just, if you have the sound off, it'll just buzz. It won't actually. So what happened, like pre-iOS 5 or, yeah, in iOS 4, even if your phone went to sleep, the app running was the main app. And so, does that make sense? So you got an app going on, and you just let your phone naturally fall asleep. It's still, like,
right,
quote, on. And so when it went off, it went off for reals. And so it worked. Not the case in iOS 5 anymore. When the phone goes to sleep, it gets relegated to a background app. And the second these clock apps become background, they perish. They don't work anymore because all they have are the alerts, which are useless. And so it's a very interesting thing. So I'm kind of bummed about that because I liked using that app for waking up, and I can't use it. And yeah.
So I have two comments in regard to this. Because number one, you know, when iPhone or when Apple announced background apps on the iPhone, you know, Steve Jobs criticized Google for how they implemented, you know, kind of tongue in cheek, but criticized them for how they implemented multitasking, because it's quote unquote true multitasking. The program is, or the app is live, but in the background. Whereas how Apple did it is they decided to implement essentially what are APIs that run in the operating system, and so you can send part of your app into these APIs. So the app doesn't run live, and they picked out, it was something like seven different, it wasn't very many,
no,
but it was like seven different case uses that they thought were,
it's like music,
something,
location. Those are the two big ones. Right. Would do the auto complete or auto finish was another one. Yeah.
And
anyways.
But they ended up so obviously this is just a case that they hadn't really considered, and it was really more of a hole that they hadn't closed in use. And so I think what you'll see happen is there's probably enough apps out there that are going to suffer enough where I go to imagine that they will include a special case usage for that, because it's kind of ridiculous.
Well, and I feel like they did work in iOS 4, and they changed something the way that it worked in iOS 5. And my guess is that it has to do with the notification system. They fundamentally changed something that end users don't see, that for whatever random reason totally affects these apps. Though their app, their alarm system, totally works fine, exactly as you would suggest, background or not. If you have it on silent, doesn't matter. It's still gonna bring out a noise. It does exactly what you would think it would do. But it's they fundamentally changed something and broke this entire category of apps.
Right, and I think it's something that they'll come and fix. Because that's, they'll do that. The problem is that it's going to take them a few months to fix it.
Right.
And when they do finally fix it, they'll have decimated these apps that used to get tremendous amounts of use. And, all of a sudden, you're selling $1 a day for apps. And all of a sudden, all your, reviews get posted as, oh, it doesn't work anymore. And you just get dried up. So as a developer, that would be really, really irritating.
Yes.
you know, as an end user, it's momentarily irritating. They'll come back in a few months, but...
That does bring up one of the interesting things about being a developer for any system in general, right? Where you could be doing fine, and then they come out with some new fix, in quotes, that totally breaks whatever it is that you've done. And that's just an interesting place to be in. I don't know. I still wouldn't mind having to figure that out, because it means that I've had a successful app.
Being successful. Right. I guess it's an important point to make, that Apple usually gets railroaded for having their policies on the App Store, but that is something that happens to almost every platform. You know, Microsoft spends a tremendous amount of time and money to not have that happen, and it's created, you know, just monstrous technical problems for the platform. And, you know, to be totally honest, Windows 8 probably, you will not see that sort of reverse compatibility and longevity, just because they're trying to design a platform that will be good for tablets, and they're probably going to have to do their Metro version or whatever it is of Windows 8 will essentially not be reverse compatible with the last 20 years of technology, which...
That's okay.
Oh my gosh, that's going to be... Yeah, I mean, it's a good thing, and it has to happen eventually, but by putting it off for so long, unlike Apple, it's just going to cause monumental problems. But we'll see what happens.
Yeah, we will. So, the last thing, though, that was broken and is now fixed is a video game that I downloaded. I actually downloaded it, like, 2 weeks ago, a while ago, and it didn't work at all. I downloaded the Star Wars Arcade Falcon Gunner for iPhone. And it would work for about 30 seconds and then crash. And I wouldn't do that. I mean, literally, I paid money for this thing and it didn't work. And I was just like, oh my gosh, I hope that they fix this, because this is totally annoying. Well, in their latest update, they did. They specifically called it out. Fixed crashes on iPhone 4S. Oh, good. And this game, next time I see you, you have to play it, because it is awesome.
All right.
The idea is you are a gunner inside of the Millennium Falcon, okay?
Nice.
Sitting in a turret. And they have, basically, there's two different types of controls. One that's dumb, where you're tilting the screen and you'll rotate whichever way you tilt. The other way, which uses the gyroscope, which is infinitely better. You have to play the game in a swivel chair, or you have to be standing, because there's TIE fighters coming at you from all angles, and so you're literally like spinning around in circles, moving the phone up, moving the phone down, looking for these TIE fighters to shoot them.
In 3D space.
I mean, is that the way that works?
Well. But I mean, because you have to move around in 3D, they're coming not necessarily 3D in perspective, but TIE fighters are coming in behind you literally,
yes,
and you have to turn around to address them.
Yes, yes, correct. Yes. It's pretty darn awesome and a ton of fun. And then you can do something which I think it's fascinating, and I don't know why they did it other than because they decided to do it, but you can play in an augmented reality mode. So you're like in your room, and you could be fighting TIE fighters, and it looks like they're literally flying around your room.
Weird.
Yeah, it's very strange. Kind of like, all right, cool, I guess. I think it's better without the AR on, just to play normal. And
now that you mention this, I actually think I saw a video of this.
I think you did. They were playing must in front have of been like a year cityscape or something.
Right, and you know what? I think they added that feature because augmented reality was like a really... Everybody was talking about, like, everything will be augmented reality.
Yeah.
You won't look at the world anymore. You'll look at the world through your iPhone.
Yeah.
And so I think they were just jumping on the bandwagon to get hits, which is funny when you have a high-quality game that you have to have some sort of a gimmick there.
But no, I think it's awesome. Just the fact that they take advantage of the gyroscope itself, and you got to spin and move, and like I said, it's perfect for a swivel chair because you feel like you are in the action. I don't know if they have an iPad version of the game. Maybe it's just a scaled up version, which isn't quite as cool. But just the idea that it takes advantage of the gyroscope, That is sweet. It's a ton of fun. I can waste a lot of time playing that game.
That's awesome.
Yeah, it's pretty sweet. I like it. And so, as a result of all of these, you know, cool graphics and stuff, battery life is something that's important. Like that transition, that's right. I was reading an article, and you'll have to tell me, fact or fiction, on the future of gadget batteries. These guys seem to think that they can make them last 10 times longer than what they currently do.
That is quite the claim.
Yes, and they're doing it, or they are achieving it, by doing two different things, I guess, is what they're doing. And it's the Northwestern students or research team, whatever. It says here that the first thing that they're doing is the number of lithium ion atoms in a battery's electrode are boosted by using silicon in place of carbon between the sheets of graphene.
Graphene.
Graphene. All right.
It's like graphite. It's basically what pencil is.
Okay. All right. So it's in the battery. So basically, instead of using sheets of carbon, using sheets of silicon. For whatever reason, that works better. It seems like everything does. Which, why don't they just take to the nth degree and like use gold or something like that? I just feel like that's the eventual replacement. Of course, then it'll also be 10 times as expensive. So you know, whatever.
Right.
There's that.
Not to mention, silicone's a lot lighter than gold. You know, its density is a lot lower than gold. These batteries will weigh less because they have silicone in them.
That's cool. Not a bad thing. The second thing that they've done is they scored the graphene sheets They scored the graphene sheets with microscopic holes, allowing the lithium ions to travel faster within the battery. And so doing this improves both the recharge time and the density of the lithium ions, which equates to longer lasting batteries with faster recharge times. Perhaps, as the article says, as little as 15 minutes.
Whoa.
Yeah.
So, my thoughts. I'm actually sitting here while you're talking. I'm listening in one ear and reading the actual press release from the university, Northwestern University. Pretty exciting technology. And oftentimes, you know, you want to call baloney on companies, battery companies, because they have real vested interest in not necessarily sharing everything that they're learning, whereas because this is a university, you can kind of trust the fact that this is legitimate technology. It's easier to believe. And number two, they're not claiming anything that's, you know, they're not claiming to do anything or to operate in any way that's really radical in, from what I can see, in our understanding of how batteries work. Which is another point, you know, to say, yeah, this is definitely seems like it's legitimate technology. It's pretty exciting because obviously, you know, battery life is one of the biggest things that hold us back and what we can do. And right. How, you know, the reason why we don't have, you know, 8-core phones is because of battery life, essentially. Or 8-core tablets, rather, because 8 cores is still, that's a pretty big, anyways, not important. but so yeah, that one of the biggest limitations is energy density. So what you're gonna see, I think, with this sort of a thing is, number one, there's still a lot of research that I'm sure needs to be done, kind of really testing this out. But then once that's done, there's the other aspect of the engineering of it. How do we how do we actually set up the manufacturing of these batteries? How much does it cost? What's their failure rate? How manufacturability makes a huge difference. But I have long believed that Apple Apple's biggest goals is to create a phone that only has to be recharged once a week.
That'd be cool.
And I personally believe, and I don't have any evidence to back this up, but I personally believe they're dumping money into battery research, looking for a magic bullet of sorts. This is pretty exciting technology because it's a bunch of chemical engineers, so it's not, you're not trying to do nanotechnology type stuff,
right,
which has proven to be successful but has a really low yield rate because nanotechnology is so new. So hopefully this has the sort of future implications of productivity that other tracks don't. Or other, tactics don't. And, of course, this is the killer phrase in every article. The technology could be seen in the marketplace in the next 3 to 5 years,
yep,
the researcher said. which means, that's as good as saying, if this is as promising as we think it is, you'll see it in the next 3 to 5 years.
Well, and what I think you'll see, honestly, is, like, for example, an Apple engineer reads this article and goes, let me give that a try. And so,
yeah, and
you see it, but it does not have their name on it.
Yeah. Unfortunately, it could be another 10 years before this really, you start to see this in high-end products. It could take another 20 years for this type of technology to really infiltrate, your remote control cars. Of course, with iPhones and iPads, those are higher-end devices. But it all depends on how expensive it is. But it's silicone, and it's the other comment I wanted to make is it's silicone and lithium. Those are, the Silicon Valley got its name because of its expertise with silicone, and they're as good with lithium as they are with silicone,
yeah,
in all honesty. And those industries go together. So there's a lot of people with a tremendous amount of experience and a tremendous amount of hardware that's already equipped to deal with these different purifying and developing these chemicals. So the fact that they're using what is essentially already a really... They'll be leveraging what is essentially already a well-defined industry and using one of their, two of their main products that will help them succeed more than anything else, I think.
Yeah.
So that's pretty exciting. I like to see that.
Yeah, that would be cool.
And could you imagine going, you start your work week and you've got, your phone's charged 15 minutes and you're able to fly to... China and do all your work and then fly back and you've got your iPhone and it lasts for, the whole time, two trips to China and back, which brings me to my next article. BlackBerry got some bad news this week.
Weird.
And more of the beating on BlackBerry. Apple has officially passed BlackBerry in business. They did a poll. It was the company surveyed more than 2,300 employees at 1,100 businesses. So we're talking a lot of people, a lot of companies, and revealed that. And this isn't sales. This is actual usage information. Businesses reveal that more than 45% of mobile workers now use iPhones, up from 31% last year.
Wow.
BlackBerry users, however, slipped to 32%, down from 35%. So last year, they had a 4% lead. Thank you. And now they're behind by 13%. So just, a monumental shift away from BlackBerry. Now, obviously, BlackBerry, this is just going to, this is not good news for BlackBerry. This is their this isn't just their bread and butter. This is their core business. They don't have a business outside of corporate smartphone use.
Yeah.
And so to see people, and what they're finding is that people are buying iPhones and then bringing them to work with their own money and then bringing them to work and then they're getting, you know, they're getting tied into the system. So people are willing to spend their own money to get a better phone.
That's what I did.
Right. You know, our mother, as a matter of fact, she has to have a black phone, BlackBerry, but was so, and that's company issued and maintained, and she disliked it so much she ended up buying an iPhone and now carries around two phones.
That's awesome. But yeah. I think it speaks exactly to, you know, what you're talking about.
Right. And so I don't see anything in the future changing this trend, especially as Google improves their security. You know, because one of the big things is that as businesses change, is there are different companies, there are different governmental organizations that you have to play nice with. The SEC, as an example, the FDA, different companies, different governmental, and that's just in the U.S. Mm-hmm. But these different agencies want to be able to make sure that the phones aren't being used for improper things. And BlackBerry has a real history of that, and you know, and so, and Apple is doing a great job of following that lead and surpassing BlackBerry, and eventually Google will do the same thing with Android, and you'll see Android start to proliferate in the business sector and just continue the pounding on BlackBerry. So that's a death knell. I don't.
Good.
Everything's slipping for them, yeah. Bad time to be a Canadian phone guy.
Nice. So, do you happen to have a cool $8,400 on hand?
No.
Because if you did, you could pre-order Surface 2 from Microsoft and Samsung. Which, I'll be honest... It looks cool, I guess, both from a hardware and just a, you know, software standpoint. What's really cool about this one is they're using something called Pixel Sense, not Pixie Dust, Pixel Sense, that allows the LCD panel to essentially like see objects, movements, and touch gestures. And there's a video on TechCrunch that you can watch to, you know, to see how it works. But the basic idea is that now it looks like a table, not a huge... They were able to just make it super thin, or not super thin, but significantly thinner and sleeker as a result of it. And it is $8,400 in order to get it. And with Microsoft and most other companies except Apple, when they say coming soon... You don't actually know what that means. You could.
Right.
Soon is relative. And so you could still pre-order one. And it looked cool. I wish I had a business that totally justified the use of this.
Right.
But I don't. unfortunately. But man, it sure looks cool.
You know, one of the things I want to mention is the fact that I'm shocked that it's just going to pre-order. I remember when they announced it.
Well, this is the Surface 2, right?
But they announced it. They announced it at the CES, right?
Oh, okay. Back in January.
And yes, I mean, I have a feeling that the only reason why it's being released now is because it would just be too embarrassing to have to give an update on it at the next CES. You know, and so this has been a long time coming. And I do remember seeing the Pixel Sense and thinking to myself at the time, you know, from a technological standpoint, it seems to make a lot more sense than what they were using before, which was like an infrared sheet. And it had some significant disadvantages, I felt, just in its inability to sense multiple contacts. Whereas from what I understand, this Pixel Sense thing, where there's like a sensor right next to every pixel... its ability to sense multiple inputs and get really, really high quality imprints of what's being touched is a lot higher. So as far as the touch glass goes, it's a real significant improvement in the technology, especially on large sheets of glass. It is interesting in that it harkens back to our conversation last week. in the effect that it is still essentially a big picture. A big picture under a sheet of glass controlled by swipes.
Yep.
So, you know, in one respect, it's a huge it's a huge leap forward. In another respect, it's...
Same-o.
Yes. doesn't really change how it serves up content. It just changes the quality of the device, which, you know, it's a good... That's always good to continue that march forward, but, you know...
Yeah.
I don't know if I'd buy one.
All right. Save your $8,400 for something else.
Exactly.
Maybe a down payment for a house, something like that.
Right.
Speaking of, I had the opportunity to use... We are nailing transitions tonight. Except for the fact that, you know, we got to pause and be like, did you just see the transition? eventually, we'll get tired of that. Anyways, I was signing some paperwork. And let me take that back a second. I had to sign some paperwork related to real estate stuff this last week. And the real estate agent, he said, yeah, I will send you the documents to sign electronically using a system called DocuSign. It was awesome. So I get this email saying, you've got a document ready to be signed. Click here. So I do that, and it pops up on a website with this document that I've been working on with him. And I had to, like, sign. It was ridiculous. Like, 30 different places. It was, well, sign and or initial, depend on what it was. So you get to your very first one, you're like, all right, sign here. And so you, like, click a little button that looks like a sticky tab, and it brings a pop-up saying, what would you like your signature and initial to look like? And it gave you, like, 6 choices to choose from of different signature types. And so I, like, flipped through them, brought Jesse over, and was like, which one do you think represents who I am? And eventually I picked one, and it goes, all right, cool. And you say, sign. And it like, you know, it inserts it into that spot. And then it goes to the next one. You go, all right, sign. And you literally click, do it. And then it inserts it next, do it, insert next, do it, insert next. And then there was one spot where I actually had to put in my address, and so I typed it in. And then it went to the next one, all the way down, and I said, okay, you're done. Submit. Boom.
Nice.
Yeah, and then it gave me the option. It was like, you can either sign up and save it online with us, or you can download it, you can print it, do what you want. I opted to download it, and then the real estate agent gave me an email or text message, I think, and said, hey, you know, done. It's all taken care of. Didn't have to go into the office. Didn't have to go actually sign paperwork myself. It was sweet.
That is really cool. Because, you know, it makes everything a lot easier. Now, do you know if they have, like, an app or anything like that? Because, I mean, it's cool to be able to do it on your computer, but how much cooler would it be able to do it on your phone?
So, I know, and while we're talking, I'll look it up real quick. I know that it was a website, and I'm not sure if it used Flash or HTML or not. Let's see here. Oh, DocuSign. Free.
Nice.
DocuSign for iPhone and iPad uses the #1 electronic signature service to let you manage all of your document needs right on your iPad or iPhone. More than just a signature stamper. Oh, let's see, you can do other stuff. You can send documents for signature. You can track the status of your documents in real time. You can chart your performance. Okay. And you can sign any document sent to you for signature through DocuSign. What's more, all of this is handled by the secure DocuSign global network, not email, so your information and your signature is safe and secure. Once you install the app, you may link it to an existing account, which I didn't make because I just downloaded it for free. And signing is always free, which means you will probably have to have a paid account to get other people to sign in.
Yeah, it looks like it's $19.99 per user per month, and you need 2 or more users with any number of signers.
Sure.
So that's, you know, if you're running a business and, you know, you need that for some reason, that's a very affordable...
Like real estate stuff, where you got to sign a bazillion documents... It was so cool. And you could have, like, I do it, and then Jesse could be on her own computer, and she could do it. and or three or four people or whatever. I could see lawyers using that a lot. I'm kind of surprised that it like counts because, I guess they assume that you have to have an email. I have sole control of my email account to do that.
Well, what's interesting is the rules and how they recognize electronic signatures are changing, and I'm not even clear on what they all are, but the whole idea of e-signatures is really coming into, it's like when I was working at Genentech doing all of the training for the FDA, everything was an electronic signature, and all you did was put in your name and password.
Yeah, I can see that. Yeah.
But that was legally the same as you putting your pen to paper and signing this document, which to me is like, okay, I guess that makes sense. But
yeah, I just would have, with that, it requires you to verify something real about yourself, and they're putting trust in another system. This one didn't have that. I literally, other than it was trusting that I was the one who opened up the email that was sent to me.
Right.
And clicked on the link.
That makes sense.
Yeah, I just would have been cool to be like, I don't know how you verify who you are, but yeah. Anyways,
yeah.
It was cool to see that technology in work. I was very impressed by it. Thought it was had a large wow factor to it.
Nice.
Yeah.
Very cool. It's all right, DocuSign. Let us know when you want to pay for the advertising.
Yeah, that's right.
That's cool. That's very cool. And I really like the idea of being able to use it on your phone, because you could just see, I could see somebody going out to a house and you bust out your phone and, if you want to do it right there and then you can't,
Yeah.
you can send the document, somebody can download it and do it right there and then all that matters is, making sure that you have good connection and, that sort of thing with your carrier and, what kind of phone do you have? And this is one that's really clunky. So based on what carrier you have,
nice.
It will affect how what applications you use and what phones you use. That being said, okay. iPhone just announced that, released information that the iPhone is fastest on AT&T test show. This is being brought to you by Computer World, and so it's Matt Hamlin is the author, and so pretty reliable source. AT&T is significantly faster in megabytes per second. You're talking 6,000 on the iPhone 4S and iPhone 4. With AT&T, it's 2,000 or less than 2,000 on Sprint, and 2,500 for Verizon. So, more than twice as fast, which is a really impressive performance. Those are the max speeds. but one of the things that it's an interesting thing, and one of the things that you're also seeing is that the iPhone is they're claiming that there's been no side effect of to AT&T as a consequence of Sprint and Verizon having the iPhone
right.
in iPhone 4S sales, which I find exceedingly hard to believe.
Because
it does
you
call
don't
into,
believe it, or you've heard, you have anecdotal evidence suggesting otherwise,
I find it hard to believe because I just don't see how, they're selling so many phones on so many platforms. I just find it difficult to believe that it's not affecting AT&T at all. Now, I could see them saying the trends are continuing, but if the overall trend of iPhone sales has dramatically increased and the increase for AT&T has stayed static, I'd say that's an effect.
Yes,
but
all right, fair enough.
That's just me. Which is how I perceive, until we get some hard numbers, that's what I'm seeing happening. That being said, what do you think about that? I know we decided to go with AT&T. Now we're on AT&T is sort of it's easiest, it's pretty good deals. But, what are people using now that the iPhone's on every platform and most Android phones are on every platform and stuff like that. You know, before the iPhone, the determining factor of, you know, of what service you used was totally different because it was all feature phones and they were all pushed by the different service providers and you could only get one this phone on that carrier. But now that you're able to get most phones on most carriers, what do you think is determining what carrier people use?
Besides what they are used to?
Well, I mean, that's, you know, maybe that's the answer.
I think there's very few people who make a conscious decision on which carrier they choose. I think a lot of people go, oh, my parents are on it, and yeah. You know, or my boyfriend's on it, or whatever, and therefore that's the one that they go with. It might be a price thing, though. I don't know. They're all pretty similar. I feel like a lot of it is for, like, the normal person. It's just literally, what are the people that I know using right now? And, yeah, that's it. I think there's a few who get sick of AT&T's bad coverage in a few metro areas. And so they'll switch out of disgust to probably Verizon. But, and that's their criteria. It's, it doesn't have to do with the phones or the price.
It's bad service.
Yeah, that'd be my guess. I do know that from an iPhone standpoint, a lot of the people who I talk to who are new iPhone users are Verizon people. They're not right. AT&T. Those people have kind of already switched.
Right. I know. I guess one of the reasons I bring it up is because I've seen a lot of advertising by Sprint lately, and their big thing is, you know, true unlimited plans.
Right.
That's what they're trying to use as a draw. And I know, you know, AT&T and Verizon, for a while, AT&T was trying to use, their magnet was the, surfing and talking at the same time.
Yeah.
Texting and talking at the same time.
I like that
magnet. To me, that's a compelling, user case, usage case. But, you know, it's just interesting to see, it'll be interesting to see as, you know, this kind of continued evolution of, you know, especially as the iPhone moves into this, you know, global phone that can work on any platform, that kind of stuff, which is, you know, clearly the direction they're moving.
Makes sense.
And when you finally get to that point, what will be the, you know, what will drive people from one carrier to another and back and forth? You know, and it's interesting to see those changes. And I think, you know, it's classic with big companies that don't really understand the product that they're selling. I don't think they really understand what's going to be the compelling thing to switch. But I agree with you. I think the whole idea of the family plan and locking people in that way, where if you want to move, you have to move everybody with you. I do think that's a big hurdle that people aren't that is used as sort of a way to keep people on their service, and just, you know, unless you have a really, really, really compelling reason to switch, like terrible service, I think people just put up with it.
Yeah, that's the boat I'm in.
Yeah. So interesting. So this is going to be moving on, kind of sticking with that whole Apple theme. So I got two that I kind of want to go over together. Number one, I want to point out that the iPad rumors have already started. Apple Insider on Friday announced that. Is this the right one?
I don't know.
Sorry, no. iLounge. Announced their first you know, this is what we think are coming. Number one, they think the third-gen iPad's going to have be a little bit thicker. And they're saying that it's going to accommodate a twin-bar system needed to light the higher-resolution display. So, also a higher-resolution display. And then it's going to come in March and probably be shown as early as January. So, somewhere between January and March again. From the earliest of...
That's a rumor?
Rumors, yeah.
Okay.
Now, that might be a rumor in that this is what I predict because that's what they've always done and I haven't seen anything to change that.
That's what I would say.
Right. And then you tag it as a rumor and everybody gets excited.
Right.
But that's always fun to talk about, but is not nearly as exciting, in my opinion, as the rumor that competitors are going to concede the tablet market to Apple in 2012.
They haven't yet?
Oh, right. Well, I think it's going to be...
CES will be the real giveaway.
Right. And I think what a lot of people are feeling, and this article actually says that, you know, it's going to be Apple and Amazon are going to be your two real competing tablets.
You don't think they'll be Android big time?
That's what people are saying.
Wow.
They're starting to see this real move. Well, you know, one of the things to point out here is that the Kindle runs on Android.
That's true.
You know, to say Android, you know, I think Android will stick around in the tablet form, but you know, the companies that are really going to succeed with it, you know, it's like HP and Dell and Acer, and these, I think one of the biggest problems is they can't decide what platform they want to throw themselves behind. Do we want to go with Android? Do we want to wait for
Windows 8?
For Windows 8? Do we want to stick with you know? Do we want to try to get our own you know, operating system and leverage that? Hello, HP. You know, and you know, how do we want to go about this? And I think what's going to happen is, and what this article is kind of talking about is that basically they're going to get to the point that eventually they're going to let people figure out what OS they want, and then once there's kind of a clear winner, that's what they're going to pursue. Which, ironically, because Apple is probably going to be the dominant force in the market, means that they won't be able to get in at all. And I think the only reason a company like Amazon will even be an also-ran is because there will be a space for the super low-end, for the $100 and $150 tablets.
Right.
And I think that even as Apple, I think they will eventually lower their price points a little bit. You don't think so?
No.
I mean, when I say eventually, I mean not this year, not next year.
Well, they might do exactly what they've done with the iPhone, which is here's the iPad 3, and you can pick up the iPad 2 for, you know, half price or whatever like that.
Exactly.
And then you could, I don't know, it would be interesting if they did the 3G subsidized plan. I don't think they do right now.
But
could you imagine giving away, like, then when they're on the iPad 4, giving away an iPad 2 with a 3G plan for a 2-year contract? I mean, that would be interesting. I don't think they will. But I could definitely see them saying, you know, here's the latest and greatest, and here's the 8-gig version or whatever of the iPad 2, and it's $200, right where HP and all those other companies have said this is the place to play. I could see that.
Right. And
boy, I would have trouble saying no to that device.
I would have so much trouble, James. I think I would take all my textbooks that I still am using to study for finals and sell them all. I don't see any reason for them to not do that. And, you know, obviously they don't even have to compete at the lowest end of the market. They don't have to compete at the $150 tablet market. They can leave that to the guys that aren't making color screens, that aren't doing high definition, that are just, you know, doing this low end stuff.
I don't know.
And
the Kindle's the only thing I've seen succeed at that.
And that's why I think long, well, Yeah,
I mean, Kindle.
That's why they're saying. That's why this article is saying Amazon is going to be that the PC makers are just going to give up, and they're going to let Amazon and Apple fight.
Well, I found this interesting thing. I don't have anything that I don't remember the article that I saw it in, but it's like they're saying the big problem here is that since Android's ubiquitous in the sense that. It's Google's operating system, that kind of stuff. And they can, yeah, sure, manufacturers can add their own stuff on top of it. But it's like, they're all playing the margins game. I can produce them cheaper than you can, therefore I'm going to make some money. But there's no differentiating factor, because they're all kind of the same right. size, and all kind of have the same specs, and they look a little different. And the second someone comes out with a cool-looking one, the rest of them are all going to copy them, so you get, like, what, at most a 7 or 8 month lead? And
right.
And so it's just this game where it's like, man, we could be, we're going to put in a whole lot of effort, and we're not going to make a ton of money off of this. The same problem they're having with the PC business. The only problem is they're not selling, you know, two every second like HP is. They're selling
right.
less, and that's hard to justify that kind of work and effort when you're not selling as many. I don't know. Maybe it'll get there someday. And I think Windows 8, actually, that'll be the one where they'll go, yeah, what the heck? You know, we can... We already got the licensing agreement. We're already working with Microsoft. Then let's make some tablets and see where this goes. And that is significantly different enough than an iPad that I actually think some people would go for.
I think the biggest problem they're going to run into, though, is that Microsoft is already addressing the fact they're going to have that Windows 8 Metro designed specifically for tablets.
Yeah.
And it won't be reverse compatible. It won't be the whole universe. It will be as iOS is to OS X... So will Windows 8 Metro be to Windows 8?
They're saying they're
going to
have
a
problem, or?
Oh yeah, I just think it's going to be I can't even come up with the word. It's going to be so big, you know. And I think that people just won't buy them because they'll already have their apps.
Huh.
You know, they'll either have their Android apps, or they'll have their iPhone apps, or they'll have their Kindle app. You know, the whatever apps they have, they're gonna. You know, they're just getting into the market too late. Now I could see them making the devices. Just because there's a small niche, you know, like
yeah.
there are other MP3 players out there other than the iPhone, because somebody out there will buy them, just not very many.
Right.
And I think you'll continue to see that as time goes on. And kind of keeping in this vein of rumors, this is the weekend of rumors. Facebook, it's rumored that they're going to IPO in 2012.
All right, about time.
Yeah, and if you know, one of the things that they've kind of done that everyone's a little bit sketched out by is they've obviously, you know, you get stock options as an employee,
yeah.
but they get these like private investors that are not technically stocks, and they've really kind of pushed their way into what's the word I'm looking for? They've gotten a tremendous amount of funding without actually selling any stock, which, as I understand it, the SEC isn't ecstatic about. But what's really interesting in this article that I was reading on TechCrunch was saying that the reason why they're going to do it, the reason why there is a move to do it, since they have been able to get such great funding for so without actually having to sell stock on the New York Stock Exchange and not having to worry about that, is because, you know, they use stock options as a big carrot for employees, and since there's no IPO, that carrot is kind of going away. And so eventually they have to IPO in order to justify those options that everybody had purchased in the company. So it'll be pretty exciting to see, kind of when that happens and how it, you know, what people think their value is and what they IPO for, as I think it'll be pretty enormous. And I think Facebook is going to want to be in the league of Apple and Google and Microsoft as an expensive stock that's not really affected by low-end trading. And because they're such a big, valuable company, I think they'll be able to afford to, you know, kind of have a really high stock price. But, man, what a good time to be working at Facebook and getting share, you know, shares and stuff. But
that's not me.
Pretty, yeah, me neither. Man, working for Mark, getting the money. It'll be pretty interesting to see if they make a bunch of millionaires and billionaires and those people suddenly decide, hey, you know what I don't want to do anymore? Work.
We'll see. Man. They'll probably stick around. But.
Yeah. Yeah, I think companies like that, you know, it's not as big of a concern as sometimes people make it out to be. But it'll be pretty interesting to see as that kind of corporate drama continues.
Yeah.
So one last thing.
All right.
And I want to talk about. Have you gotten to play Skyrim or Modern Warfare 3?
The answer is no, but I did get to listen to a friend talk about Skyrim. Which, by the way, he should be listening to this podcast, so hi, David.
Yeah, buddy.
So I got to hear his opinion of it, which I think he... Let's see. If I were him, I would be saying that it was God's gift to the world. He kind of looked down at it, gave a little wink, a little... And smiled. It says it was good.
Yeah.
And... no, he said it's a pretty awesome game. Pretty deep and full of a lot of stuff. I think I'm going to... Well, I know. I'm going to go over to his house for Thanksgiving. And if I'm nice, he'll probably let me play. Or at least watch him play. It's more like it. Hi, David. And... but no, he said it's pretty flippin' awesome. It sounds cool. Sounds like something I'd want to play.
Yeah, I've heard great things about it. Unfortunately, I don't have a platform that would allow me to purchase it and play it.
You know what we should do? David, you'll appreciate this. we should invite him on to talk about it, or somebody in general, as a guest, as a guest to say, hey, tell us about such and such, someone more knowledgeable.
I totally agree, especially since there are quite a few games that are coming out this Christmas that people are getting all antsy about, you know, Assassin's Creed and such. So I agree with that completely. You heard it here first, everybody. We're going to have a guest.
Yes. Someday. It'll happen. Yeah, no, it sounds like a cool game. I like the idea of, it sounds like it's like a different version of Zelda, or what is it, Final Fantasy, or...
Yeah, a little bit grittier, a little bit more, you know, immersive.
Killing dragons. Sounds cool.
Definitely.
I like it. Anything else going on in your life? Besides wishing you had a video game system that you could play?
I don't think. I've just been kind of... Oh, I made this really cool... took on a project helping out one of our cousins. Is helping out his fraternity, and they're doing these bios. And it's just a... I thought this was pretty funny because they're getting their fraternity installed as a chapter, which is something that I was involved with. And it's a big deal because it's like we're officially starting this chapter of the fraternity. And their national organization wants to do bios on each of the people in the fraternity. There's like 30 people, and there's like a couple questions that you should answer, like hometown, age, stuff like that. And, you know, like, why did you join? What do you like about this? And then you have to format that all as like this bio page with their picture. And so I sat down and asked them, like, you know, how do you kind of plan on doing this? And they were like, well, probably go in a meeting and, like, ask everybody to fill out this information. Maybe just, like, email it to us, and then we'll, like, put it together or something. I was like, are you serious? They're like, yeah. I'm like, that's going to take years to finish. Like, you're really going to try to do that? And they were like, yeah. I was like, here, I'll tell you what. Tonight, I'm going to throw something together for you, and you guys are going to be impressed. So I went home, and I started throwing a little bit of PHP, adding an extra table to one of my databases, and just made a form where you click on it. You, like, they'll be given a password that they can use. They'll, like, type in the password. It'll bring them to their page, and they'll type in information, and then you'll be able to take all that and just put it into like an HTML page. You'll just type in their name, and then it'll propagate with their right, and then they'll just be able to print it off. So
nice.
They're all pretty excited about it, and I was excited because I was like, it's one thing to say to have done it on one level. You know, where it takes you weeks to kind of figure out everything out, and then it's a whole other thing to actually be able to say, yeah, I'll do this for you, and then actually be able to do it. So, it was pretty fun.
Very cool.
I enjoyed myself.
Nice.
So.
Nice, those are fun.
What about you?
Projects. So, I moved a bunch of dirt this weekend, and I have a blog post on my personal blog, outsidetheratrace.com, that will be going live tomorrow sometime. As I finish it up. But on it, I will be sharing some stats, and I thought I'd share some stats with you right now on this project, because I'm a stats guy, and I like collecting this stuff, and, well, quite honestly, it was an escape from the horrid realities of what was going on. So, first, we start out with one hole. Second, we had two piles, one of sand, one of dirt. There was 14 yards total. 10 of sand, 4 of dirt. 144 wheelbarrow trips.
That is rough. Oh my gosh. Woo.
So Jesse went every third trip, so she took 48 trips total. I took 96.
Wow, that is rough.
Here's an interesting stat. We had two spills.
Oh, that's not bad.
And we bid them both right in a row. And so then we decided to take a break.
Yep, that's always a good time.
Yeah. Jesse did it, and I went, "Ah, man." And then I did it and went, "Come on, we're going inside. We're going to go take a break." This is a joke. So, you'll like this one. When I took a trip, we did 20 scoops of the shovels. When Jesse took a trip, we did 16 scoops of the shovels. So we took a total of 2,688 shovel scoops.
You know, and as somebody who has done a couple scoops of shovel in my time, that's a lot. That's a lot of scoops.
Yeah, about 14 yards worth.
Right.
Which, by the way, to keep the math going, that means that we were scooping... I think I got the set in the wrong place. We were scooping, or we were wheelbarrowing about a tenth of a yard each wheelbarrowful. By the way, just point that little set out there. So another thing that happened... to walk to the pile took me 40 steps. To walk to the pile took Jesse 55 steps, or 80 for me round trip, 110 round trip for Jesse. Multiply it out. Together we took 12,960 steps in our little, route back and forth, our little circuit. You know, plus the steps we took both shoveling and then walking around and cleaning and stuff like that, probably double it. As far as the day. But in terms of actually moving dirt, 12,960. Here was the nice part. We had 0 inches of rain, which was nice.
Ooh,
it was dry.
That's awesome.
It took us one day, a total of 7 hours worth of work. So it comes out to about took us
that's
half
tough.
An hour per yard. And at the end of the day, we had 0 remaining holes.
Nice. That's the important part right there.
That's why I saved that stuff last.
Nice. So, congratulations.
That, I just literally read my blog post to you out loud, is what I did this weekend. I'm sore today, I'll be honest.
You know what, James? If you weren't, I was going to be really impressed.
I am sore, so no impressing today. I'm going to play soccer later tonight, but... that's not impressive. We'll see how I do first. But yeah, that's it. So, thank you everybody for joining us. I am James Furlow, and my brother is Matthew Furlow, and we will talk next time.
Did it go?